this Hagmann Report. HagmannReport.com is our website. Peter Berichoka is our guest. He's got an article up on HagmannReport.com today. Check it out. Just a talented writer. He writes for American Thinker. And I want to just say thank you and hello to Thomas Lifson, the head of American Thinker. What a great website. And folks, for our articles and blog posts by Peter Berichoka, go to American Thinker there. But again, a big thank you to Thomas Lifson, the editor there. And Peter Berichoka is one of my favorite people. He writes about a number of things, single payer healthcare. He writes about healthcare in general. He writes about the media. And let's start there. First of all, Peter, it's been, I think, 3 weeks and a day since you were last on our program. Welcome back.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you very much.
Now, if we can start out, because we kind of left off, I think the last time that you were on, we were talking about the media. We were talking about the various media conglomerates, including and especially Fox News, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly, all of that stuff. And you've written about it subsequent to your appearance. Where are we at with Fox News, and what's going on there that we should know about?
Well, when we last connected 3 weeks ago, I had written a number of articles about the cable news wars, as they're now being called now, the competition between or among CNN, MSNBC, and the Fox News Channel. And there was a period of a dislocation there after some firings and the death of Roger Ailes, who was fired almost a year before his death. And the ratings seemed up for grabs, and they still are, although they've settled down a bit. MSNBC, the far-left cable news channel, has certainly risen a lot. And in fact, in the most recent ratings that came out, MSNBC has grown the most in terms of new viewers and also viewers in the preferred demographic, viewers aged 25 to 54. Who are the preferred viewers for some reason for advertising purposes. Now, Fox News has also grown slightly, and CNN, although it's grown slightly, is now coming in a distant third because of the pathetic nature of its programming. And not to say that MSNBC is much better, but MSNBC has done very well at targeting that uber left-wing niche. And Rachel Maddow, the star of MSNBC on at 9 p.m. Eastern, now has the highest rated program on the three cable news channels on most nights. But Fox is still doing pretty well in total viewers and in the demographic. And it's a little like reading the tea leaves, though. All of the news channels put out news releases analyzing the Nielsen ratings, which measure the viewership, and they can all spin it. And you really have to look into these ratings, look at the raw data, and try to figure it out for yourself, and really, who has time for that? So I take a quick look at it. I noticed that Sean Hannity, for example, who is doing one of the two best programs on Fox News, Sean and Tucker Carlson. Sean's on at 10 Eastern. Carlson is on at 8. And, of course, Sean Hannity is pretty much the most popular and successful conservative talk show host in the history of the United States. Rush Limbaugh may be slightly ahead of him in terms of radio audience, but there's nobody who's close to him in terms of TV audience on the right, and Sean does both, 3 hours a day of radio, an hour a day of TV on Fox News, and when you put them together, he's basically number one, and he's doing some fantastic shows lately, inviting guests almost every night, including attorney Greg Jarrett, who also works for Fox News, who's been doing independent reporting on the fake news and the purported Russia collusion scandal and deconstructing that, the Mueller investigation. Sean is also often joined by Jay Sekulow, the attorney who's now working with the Trump administration. And another frequent guest is Sarah Carter, who's gotten tremendous exposure on Hannity's show in recent weeks, who writes for Circa News. And she is another excellent example of an up-and-coming investigative journalist who may turn out to be one of the best ones that the country has ever produced. So Hannity is must-see viewing for me, as is Tucker Carlson to an extent. And actually, last Friday, Tucker had on Stephen Cohen, Professor Stephen Cohen, as a guest, the expert on Russia and the Soviet Union, Princeton, New York University, 78 years old. His wife is Katrina Vandenhuvel, who's the editor of The Nation, a very far-left publication. And Stephen Cohen is pretty far-left, too. But he's pretty much come out demystifying this Russia collusion schedule, in essentially saying it's a bunch of BS. But he's saying it from a vantage point of one of the top Russia scholars in the United States today. And after the show, and I wrote an article on that program, which was published on Saturday, I exchanged some emails with Dr. Cohen, and he seems like a very nice man. He said he would agree to be interviewed by me for American Thinker when he gets back from a foreign trip at the end of this month. But, you know, I thought, what a nice guy. He's really telling the truth as he sees it. He's not throwing his lot in with these lunatics on the left who are just bashing Trump and pushing this ridiculous Russia collusion story. So this is what Fox News is still capable of. They are not perfect. They've made some mistakes. I'm sure they'll make them in the future, and we don't know what the future holds, because one of my articles was about the Murdoch boys. Those are the two sons of Rupert Murdoch. Rupert is now 86, sees the mogul behind Fox News and a transnational entertainment empire, which has too many facets to even begin to list. But he's winding down, and the sons are winding up. They're both in their 40s. They're liberal. Their wives are liberal. And they're distracted, however, from the moment. My source, my high-level source at Fox News, has told me that for the moment, things are stable at Fox News. We're not seeing Hannity's show as imminently threatened with cancellation or firing as it might have seemed about a month ago, because not only he's having excellent ratings, he's the linchpin of the primetime schedule, but the Murdoch boys are preoccupied with what's going on in Great Britain. The Fox empire is trying to get control of Sky TV, a large cable channel in the UK and in some European countries. Fox owns a percentage of it. They want the whole thing. This has to be approved by the bureaucrats in England. They are not really approving it. They're demanding a longer investigation period. And so the Murdoch boys are caught up in all of that, and they don't have time to mess around with the Fox News schedule here for the moment. But we shall see what happens in the future. And but just let me wrap this up with a bow, this topic, by saying this. One of the times we spoke in the past, I forget if it was my first or my second appearance on the Hagmann Report, I mentioned that the conclusion I had come to in delving so deeply into the cable news wars and the cable channels and Fox in particular is that I realized that for me, the mainstream media, even Fox News, which has been a friend to fair and balanced reporting and conservative reporting on the whole for the last 21 years, I don't go to them even anymore for as a primary source. I probably gave up on that almost without realizing it a few years back, just as I gave up on CNN, MSNBC, The New York Times, The Washington Post, and the rest about a decade ago. And now my primary sources are the Internet, and also not only the written word on the Internet, but podcasting, live stream shows, programs like The Hagmann Report. Not that there's another program like The Hagmann Report, but you know what I mean. The Internet is now my primary source, and Fox and everything else in the mainstream is becoming a secondary or ancillary source. And I think that's how it's got to be. That's how it will be for those of us who are following the news as either citizens who see an investment in our futures in this, or professionally we're following it. And let's face it, the information, and more often the truth, more often than not, is online. It's to be found online. And that's a sea change. Yeah. That's a paradigm shift.
Peter, one bit of information. I'm going to surprise you with this. We didn't speak before the interview, and I'm just going to toss this out there. One bit of information. You mentioned Fox News, and Sean Hannity, to me, I do believe he's got the best program out there when it comes to dispelling the myth, the conspiracy, crackpotted lunatic stuff about Russia the illusion of collusion, I suppose. So he is a target in many ways. But according to one source who I referenced off air to you, stated very much the same about it being quiet there. Preoccupied was not a word that was used, but certainly suggested. But the main point was it may not look the same come the fall as it does today, and kind of like make hay while the sun shines, and because you just don't know, come the fall the lineup might change, because the objective is to kind of move directions, move the direction a lot more, I should say, to the left and liberal. Just want to kind of toss that out there for whatever it might be worth. And, you know, anonymous or unnamed sources are pretty much worth sometimes just that, just, you know, nothing.
Well, I think it's of tremendous value, Doug, what you've just reported, and you and I have exchanged information on that background level before via your source, and it's held up according to my source. And I was even able to quote your source anonymously in one of my articles for American Thinker, and that got the attention of one or more people at Fox News, one of whom has become my high-level source and who has said that that information was right on the money. And I think even as an informed viewer of Fox News, one can notice now that there's an incremental, very gradual, subtle and sometimes not so subtle shift to the left. Now, it hasn't obviously affected some of the primetime programming yet, which consists of Martha McCallum at 7 p.m., Tucker Carlson at 8 p.m., that awful show The Five at 9 p.m., and at 10, Sean Hannity. Those shows are pretty much intact at the moment, and I think the hands are off. In fact, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal 2 or 3 days ago about Fox News, and of course that has to be taken with a grain of salt because the journal is owned by the same company as owns Fox News, although they insist that they're editorially independent of Fox ownership. But in any case, the article quoted Tucker Carlson as after he had a lunch in Los Angeles with Lachlan Murdoch, one of the Murdoch boys, one of the sons. Tucker said that nobody's told him what to do or what to say on his program for the moment, so all is well. But during much of the rest of the day, we see this creeping integration of more hardcore left-wing commentators, contributors, and the contributors, if they're identified as a Fox News contributor, that means they're being paid by Fox News, often six figures a year. This would include people like Jessica Tarloff, a whole range of people. Their names aren't coming to mind right now. But I'm seeing more of them. I'm seeing them on more programs. For example, if you go to Jessica Tarloff's Twitter, you know, typically these people who appear on Fox News as guests or contributors will tweet every time they're about to do a show. Oh, I'm in the green room. I'll be on in 5 minutes or whatever. So none of us can watch 24 hours a day. So occasionally I'll check her and some of the other contributors' Twitter feeds, check it out. And I see that they're appearing on Fox News, on Fox Business, on Fox Radio multiple times a day, these hardcore leftists. And they're taking up oxygen, they're taking up time that otherwise would be given to either decent liberals like Professor Cohen or Patrick Cadell, who I haven't seen since November on Fox News, former co-host of the Political Insider show, which has also disappeared, or Doug Schoen, or Michael Murphy, I believe, African-American activist from New York who's occasionally on Sean Hannity's show, who's a liberal but who speaks like an old-style liberal. He speaks common sense and not just stupid communist talking points like most of the rest do. So we have to pay close attention and hope that they'll keep on with something decent. And if not, we're just going to have to try to hold their feet to the fire through publishing articles, through whatever it takes, you know, pressure on advertisers, But at least Sean Hannity, for his part, will still have his three-hour-day radio show, for which he's paid handsomely, and I think his contract runs there for quite some time. And his radio show is the radio equivalent of his television program. I've been monitoring it most days recently as part of my multitasking effort here. And he does kind of a longer form on the radio of what he does on his TV show that night. Of course, he has about 38 minutes on TV when you subtract the commercials, and he has about 2 hours on the radio when you subtract the commercials. By the way, I came across an interesting statistic. Excuse me for bumping the camera. I found out that...
No worries.
And hopefully I'm still in focus. On the Fox News Prime Time, they sell commercial time for $14,100 per 30-second ad. And there are at least 40 30-second ads in an hour of Fox News. Not all of them national, some are local. But they're raking in major six figures for every hour of their primetime programming. So I thought that might be an interesting statistic for you to keep in mind as you are going forward with expanding your operation, which, by the way, I read just today the news that you're about to expand a week from this coming Monday to an additional 2 hours per day, an hour in the morning, Doug, with you, and then an hour at lunchtime with Joe and John Robertson, and I'm so excited to hear that news, and I can't wait for the launch of your additional 5 hours, or your additional 2 hours, making a total of five. And as I was telling John on the phone this afternoon, you've got five down and 19 to go.
you know, there's so much to cover, and there's so much that doesn't get reported during our evening program that we hope to fill in some of the blanks. And you know what, Peter, it's, although we, personally, I feel I might not be good at what I, you know, I'm not a good broadcaster. I'm certainly not a professional broadcaster. At least we can get more of the truth out, in various platforms. So we're excited about this, and I want to thank all of the people who support us, because we are a listener-driven, listener-supported show primarily, and people are hungry for the truth. Your writings, the information you put out is so important for people to really... I mean, people are hungry for the information that we provide, but you provide as well. So... Thank you, by the way.
Well, what I'm really appreciating, Doug and Joe, with your forum and with American Thinker, is that I can touch on some of my long history in this. I mean, we're living in kind of ahistorical times. There, across the board in the mainstream, there's less and less interest in history. Of course, it's no longer taught for the most part in schools or even at the university level. It's hardly ever referenced in journalism and mainstream media journalism today. It's like everything happened today and nothing happened yesterday, and we don't even want to reference what happened yesterday or before, or God forbid, in past decades. So, you know, I've been around for a long time. I've still got a clear memory, thank God, and I've held on to a lot of archival material from along the way. And I do like to try to connect the dots over the period that I've been alive and paying attention and active, so that we can see, really, there's nothing new under the sun. Everything, or a lot of what we see today, is the same old, and if we refuse or are not open to learning from history, we are going to be cursed with repeating it big time. I mean, I heard you know, your opening monologue today, which I heard was absolutely riveting, and I especially appreciated your reference about Senator Joseph McCarthy, Tail Gunner Joe. I have a beautiful photograph of him that I'm going to have to email you, which I got out of a remaindered book that I paid 50 cents for by Haynes Johnson. He was attacking Joe McCarthy, but there was a fantastic picture of Joe McCarthy in there that, just to look at it, you could see, you know, it's the picture is worth 1,000 words. So I'll be sure that you
wow.
get a copy of that. But,
thank you.
But he was right. I think Ann Coulter has also written about Senator Joe McCarthy. But I also really appreciated your putting what we are going through today in the context of a war, a civil war, a real war. Because I was thinking about that a bit earlier, thinking that we are now seeing a war. Well, one front of that war, one hot front, is the war that's being fought in the mainstream media, or in the media in general, the mainstream and then the alternative media. We now have a war between truth and fake news, between truth and fiction, between truth, accuracy, and lies. In my experience, and I would posit or argue that in the experience of the modern world, we have never seen anything like what we are experiencing right now in this war in the media. I mean, of course, in fascistic countries, totalitarian countries in the past, whether it was Soviet Russia, Hitler's Germany, North Korea today, the news media has been controlled and has been propaganda 101. But we are supposed to be different. We have a legacy of democracy, of freedom of the press, of fighting it out on the battlefield of the media. And today, the battle in the mainstream media has pretty much been won by the forces of darkness, by the forces of collectivism, socialism, and communism, as you were putting it out in your monologue today.
Well, you know, if I can just interject something here with respect to the media and the memes, as they call them today, one thing I noticed during the McCarthy era, placement or the relevance of cartoons as made famous by Herb Bloch. Yeah. And I see the same thing taking place today, except more refined on the internet, of course, which parallels the McCarthy era. But again, the refinement is much greater because the venue, that being the internet, is much more, it's constant, you know. So anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there.
By the way, Herb Bloch was also instrumental. He was still working at the Washington Post in the early 1970s, and his cartoons, actually starting well before Watergate, satirizing and mocking Nixon in a satirical cartoon way, were very significant in dragging Nixon's reputation down so that he was ripe for impeachment calls following the so-called Watergate scandal. So tremendously influential was Herb Bloch through the 1970s.
Indeed. Very, very interesting and very prescient. And that's why, folks, that's why I love our conversations with Peter Berichalka. Just an amazing writer, very prolific writer. Several of his columns can be found on HagmanReport.com. His home, of course, is an American Thinker. And I want to give a shout out to Thomas Lifson, the head lead editor of American Thinker. But Peter, your writings are just so right on the money, and your analyses, your measured approach to things is just amazing. Again,
well, thank you, Doug. And I want to say as well, on this special day, July 13th, 2017, I am proud to have had my first article that was exclusively prepared for the Hagman Report published today on the Hagman Report. And I'm extremely comfortable and thrilled with that new venue, and I will be following up today's article with several more parts on the same subject, and hopefully be contributing on a regular basis original reporting from now on to the Hagman Report. And I've always felt it's important to me to have venues that I feel good about and like the people behind them and like the output of the product. And I couldn't have a higher appreciation or regard for what you are doing, not only with your daily broadcasts, but with the Hagman Report website, which is coming along quite nicely, and I'm really happy to be part of it now.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And we are so excited. And folks, this is, we are so pleased to bring you such luminary and proficient, prolific writers. Again, Peter Berichalka is our guest, and so knowledgeable about a number of topics. And so many different areas to get into. Joe, we're getting close to the bottom of the hour break, but I want to toss it to you.
Well, yeah, and folks, I would urge you to go to HagmanReport.com and read Peter Chalka's article, Single-Payer Healthcare Will Destroy Your Freedom and Kill You. And, you know, there's an interesting case going on over in the UK that we could get into in the next segment that shows what, you know, I guess people would call death panels and this type of care could bring to our society. And it's a pretty horrific story. But this article lays out the history of medicine, alternative medicine, healthcare, to the ACA, to the single payer, basically, you know, the communist style, government controlled system that it looks like we are trying to move into, and the damages and the dangers that this brings along. And it's, much more encompassing than people will think when you think about what they were able to do with the healthcare changes that they did through the ACA, through Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, from before Obamacare to Obamacare, when you were being taxed if you didn't have it, and the other impositions and the raising of rates and everything else, what will they do when they gain total control, when the government gains total control of healthcare? We've already seen a lot of the plans released, and we can get into this on the other side with Peter Barry Chalka, who is our guest for the rest of this hour. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to this edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. We'll be right back.
Visit HagmannReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
There shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is. It'll blow you away. Absolutely. Eric's a...
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Chang Personal Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We're offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Remedies Kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Remedies Kit at www.changepersonwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagmann and Hagmann Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagmann for making this all possible. God bless.
We'll be right back.
freedom and kill you is the title. And it's the first article that Peter wrote exclusively for HagmanReport.com.
He's a big writer
he's got a book out on cancer, and we'll get back to that in just a minute. I want to bring you a quick word from SolarC. This is one of our sponsors. Most overlooked preparations are water and energy. With the real threat of cybersecurity and EMP weapons, you may want to consider the SolarC. It's the only EMP-hardened battery-based solar system available to the public today. The folks at Portable Solar have designed this product with EMP hardening and expandability in mind. This is a veteran-owned Christian company, and they stand by their product. You can watch their EMP testing videos on their YouTube channel or by going to their website, www.solarc.us. Most people don't realize how much power they need to run essential items like a fridge, freezer, lights, AC, etc. Portable solar engineers help you decide what type of backup power you should consider and how to pick a good system, even if it's not their product. They do free consultations, and there is a lot of educational material at solarc.us. You can also give them a call at 972-575-8875 or go to solarc.us. All right, back to our guest, Peter Chowka. He's a journalist and author for American Thinker, and it's great to have you on video, Peter. I want to kind of take a break of the news and talk about the animals that you got sitting right behind you.
Right, they're kind of my spiritual guides, I guess you might say. Behind me in this direction is a photograph of Ekaterina, who was a Russian blue cat, passed away in 2009, just under age 10, and I've had cats most of my adult life. I really like cats, which is not to put down dogs either, but cats have worked out for my lifestyle. And the Ekaterina was a really exceptional example of the Russian blue breed, which happens to be my favorite breed of cat, although the two cats who are in the household now, the two live cats, are rescue cats, although they're both gray and they kind of look like Russian blues. I was hoping one of them might make a cameo appearance tonight, but he's sound asleep at the moment, so I don't think he can be bothered. But anyone who is interested in checking out more of Ekaterina can go to RussianBlue.com, which is one of the domains that I registered in the 1990s. It's dedicated to the Russian blue cat, RussianBlue.com. And it's a small site, but it does have several photographs of Ekaterina and some links. Next to Ekaterina is a little plush toy, which is very cute, so I couldn't resist buying it at the local supermarket, and it's of a bush baby, which is a small nocturnal primate native to Africa. I guess its real name is the Galagos, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and has very large eyes, which I guess are there because of its nocturnal activities. It moves around at night, so it needs the large eye-gathering eyes. But I did want to mention, too, I've been in touch quite a bit recently with John Robertson, of course, and as we talk about animals, and I think about your studio dog, Lady, who I've heard you mention so many times, and I know that you guys are animal lovers, and John is certainly a big-time animal lover, and I feel so bad for him that he has had to report that one of his two cats has been missing for the last week or two, and he's spent endless hours searching for this cat. He told me the complete story today of how the cat went missing, and I thought that with your large audience, both on video and audio, that we could all, as I've been doing, help to direct our prayers to John and to his cat, hoping his cat stays well and that the two of them are reunited as soon as possible, especially with John having to make a move in the very near future to join you in person on the East Coast. And also, if you go to John's Twitter account, John Robertson, he has a photograph and a PayPal linked to the work that he's having to do to put out flyers. I think he's printed about 600 or more, and you know how expensive ink is. So anyone who can help out there can connect with John via his Twitter and perhaps give him a little assistance there. And just to hear him talk about his cat and his other cat, Lenny, who remains at home with him, you know, it just breaks your heart when someone's cat goes missing, just as when someone loses an animal companion, it really is heartbreaking. And I've lost a number of them over the years, and actually did a fair amount of research on what it means when you lose an animal companion. And it's been validated in the scientific and medical literature that the heartbreak, the sense of loss, can actually be greater for a person when he or she loses a treasured animal companion than when he or she loses a human relative. And it's not as weird as it sounds, and we don't have time to go into it now, but there's quite a literature about it, and it's very interesting food for thought, kind of validating the importance that animals have in our lives. And I joke, and it's not totally a joke either, that the older I get, the more I prefer the company of animals than I do to most people.
Oh, so. I'm right there with you. Me too. Lady and I have endless conversations, and well, it's more of a monologue as opposed to a dialogue, but I understand. I get that. And animals to me are a gift from God. Cats, dogs, regardless, they're a gift from God. I have to say this, and then we can move on. Out of all the articles I've written, I wrote an article when my Australian Shepherd passed away, Holly, goodbye to my best friend. And out of all the articles I've written, that article was the most passed around, was the most popular article I've ever written. It appeared in numerous publications, the animal publications. So that just tells you, I guess, that's not to say, you know, yay me. It's to say, boy, animals do play an important part in our lives, you know, as our buddies, as our friends. So, yeah.
Absolutely. When one of our cats passed away in 1998, it was our first Russian Blue, I was so distraught that I actually created several memorial websites in the memory of this cat, and registered a domain in her name as well, and several of those sites are still up. But it got me in touch with a number of other pet owners, or I hate to even use that word, pet owner, but for lack of a better term, and we compared notes on the sense of loss and helped to work through it. So it's the only time I've ever used the internet for that kind of reaching out and networking for an emotional purpose, and it was really helpful over the period, actually, of several months it took me to really get over that, the loss of that cat. She was so special and so dedicated, and as we were dedicated to her.
And that tells a lot to me. That tells a lot about your heart. I'm just saying. I'll just leave it at that, because I'm going to start getting emotional here, because I just, you know, it's, again, they're a gift from God. Although I will say this, Peter, given the fact that that's Russian Blue, we're probably going to have to pass your name along to Mueller. You know, there might be an issue here of collusion.
Well, you know, several of my URLs that I'm using now for articles are hosted at a free host that has Russian Blue in the URL at the front end, and I'm thinking, uh-oh, is that going to get me on a list? We'll see.
Well, you know, it's... In this environment, who knows? But it's something. Well, no.
I even just to wrap this up with a bow, I actually had a website in the late 1990s that was hosted in Russia. I got in touch with an English-speaking webmaster in Russia, the Russian Federation, and I said, "Would you give me some free web space to do the first ever English-language website in Russia on behalf of the Russian Blue Cat?" And the breed actually does trace back its origins to Russia. And he agreed, and he spoke English. And so for a couple of years, I had the first and for a while the only English language website in Russia for the Russian Blue Cat. So that's probably worthy of getting me on a list, wouldn't you say?
Maybe. In this day and age, you never know.
I love it.
I plead guilty.
Well, Peter, where do you want to go from here? We can get into your article, "The Single Payer Healthcare Will Destroy Your Freedom and Kill You." Folks, you got to read that article. Joe.
And it's okay. Just the first. It's the first of several.
Well, if you can, lay it out for us a little bit. Okay. Frame it up for us on the move from where we were before the Obama presidency, before the ACA, to what we're looking at with the single payer health care.
Right. Well, the forces of behind socialized medicine have been at work for about a century. To centralize medicine in a control statist grid has been the dream of collectivists, the Soviet Union, communists, since day one. And of course, there was single payer communist medicine in the Soviet Union and in Cuba, in Venezuela, and now in most of the countries of the world. Really, the United States, to my knowledge, is the last one that's left with anything approaching freedom of choice and freedom in medicine. Even so, our medical system today has evolved to the point where 64% of medical procedures in this country, the medical bill, are paid for by the federal government. And it is the largest business. $3.2 trillion annually is the bill for health care in the United States, and the government is paying almost two-thirds of it. That dwarfs the military-industrial complex, which is about $600 million. So Medicine, Inc. is five times plus bigger than the military-industrial complex. And as I think you noted earlier, Doug, and I mentioned it in my article, President Dwight Eisenhower warned us about the military-industrial complex in his farewell address in 1961. What we need today is a leading politician to warn us about the medical-industrial complex. Now, Ron Paul and Rand Paul have come somewhat close, but they are lone voices out there trying to speak some truth into this ridiculous process. But right now, we've got one foot in the water of socialism and one in this government-controlled what's left of the free market. Of course, under Barack Hussein Obama and his Obamacare, which passed the House and the Senate on a veto-proof vote, all Democrats voting for it in March of 2009, that really helped to advance the cause of socialized medicine. And some of us think that it was designed to fail, which it now is, of course, failing, so that we'd be softened up for the next step, which is full-blown single-payer socialized medicine. And we now see that the leading potential contenders for the next Democratic presidential nomination, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, you name them, they're all coming out in favor of single-payer, as is the leadership of the Democrat Party in the Congress and at the grassroots. So God forbid if we get a Democrat president and or a Democrat-controlled Senate or House, chances are we're going to get single-payer socialized medicine. And what does this mean for us? Well, when I chose the title for my article, I hope that the title would say it all, and it does. Single-payer health care will destroy your freedom, and it will kill you. And there's no exaggeration in that title. All we have to do is look at what's happening in the United Kingdom and Great Britain as we speak. There's an 11-year-old baby there named Charlie Gard, G-A-R-D. And this has become an international story. You can read about it online and watch videos. Charlie Gard was unfortunately born with a rare genetic disorder called mitochondrial depletion syndrome. And what this supposedly means is that he has brain damage, and his brain and his muscles are prevented from developing. Now, this diagnosis and the prognosis, which is hopeless, have been made by the medical establishment in Britain, which has a vested interest in looking, in defining cases as hopeless because they don't want to pay to treat them. Because under socialized single-payer medicine, there is, of course, rationing. There's only so much money that can go around. Private insurance is outlawed. Supposedly paying for your own care is outlawed unless you're very rich and part of the elite, and then, of course, you can always get the best care. So the unfortunate parents of this little baby are not only prevented from getting any kind of potentially helpful therapy that might exist. And by the way, in Britain, it probably doesn't exist, because the other thing that socialized single-payer communist medicine does is it puts the clamp on innovation and on freedom of thought and freedom of choice. So it not only curtails the choice that a patient or citizen has and what he or she can use to prevent illness or treat it, but it also puts the kibosh on any researchers who want to do anything creative because there's no incentive to it in a communist system, which is what England and Canada and Cuba and the rest have, and we don't quite yet. So the innovation exists in the United States, and there is an experimental therapy here. The parents are trying to get their child out of England to come to the United States and showing the absolute total control that England has over this baby. They're not even allowing the parents to take the child out of England to the United States for potentially a therapy that might help this little baby. So it's total control of the patient from cradle to grave. And at the other end of the spectrum, if you're too old to be helped, I guess they'll prevent you from leaving the country too. Even if you've got your wits about you and you can travel, too bad. You're staying here so we can kill you. That's what it comes down to. It's evil. It's absolutely evil. And if we don't stop it, it's going to be here in a short number of years.
Well, you know, and you did a great job describing that. What's interesting to me is, you know, the progress part. You hear the progressives always talk about the innovation and the ideas, and then you see the final sum of what they're pushing for, and it's the opposite of that. And all for a bottom line. It kind of goes in the face of the narrative that they put out there of, you know, this bleeding heart compassion and well-being for everybody. Really, that's just a myth, is it not?
Yeah, it's totally. It's not about compassion. It's not even about health care or curing disease. It's about control. I mentioned in my article online today at the Hagmann Report that I had an amazing experience in 2009. The day after Obamacare was approved, I found out about an interview that John Dingell, the oldest person in the House of Representatives. He'd been there for over 50 years, and before him, his father had been there for 30 years. So he and his father, left-wing Democrats, had represented that district in Michigan for 80 years. Now Dingell has retired, Dingell Jr., and his wife is in there. She's inherited the post. It's insane. So the day after Obamacare, he gave an obscure interview on a Detroit radio station in which he said, well, we passed Obamacare, and in essence, we finally learned how to control the people. He actually said that. So I found out about this. I got a podcast of it. I transcribed it. I published it, and it drove Dingell's office crazy. They tried to walk it back. It was picked up by Fox News, by Rush Limbaugh, by Bill O'Reilly, and it got me on the list of Media Matters and the Daily Kos. But we have a link to it at HagmannReport.com. We have John Dingell in his own words saying, in effect, we finally learned how to control the people with the passage of Obamacare. And God forbid, if they pass single payer at some point, they will have us all by the short hairs for our entire lives. And, you know, one reason I get so emotional about this when I think about that case that's going on in Britain right now with a little baby is that in my career, I've had the opportunity to cover many analogous cases. They're not exactly the same, but I cover cases, and these go on all the time, but we don't hear about them except in rare instances when they break through. I covered a number of cases 30 and 40 years ago where children with cancer were taken away from their parents who wanted to treat their children with a reputable but unconventional alternative therapy, and the medical establishment in their state or locality or hospital said, no, you don't have the right to do this. We're going to take your child away from you, pump that kid full of chemotherapy or whatever else we think he or she needs, and if you don't like it, too bad. Now, it turns out that in legal jurisprudence, there was no evidence for that. I interviewed one of the leading attorneys who actually is a story in himself, Benedict Fitzgerald, and he conducted an examination of alternative cancer therapies for a United States Senate committee in 1953, which is a mind-blowing story. But in the 1970s and 80s, I got his input on this, and he said it used to be appropriate for courts to decide if parents are responsible enough to make medical decisions. It has never been jurisprudence in this country to make, for a court to make medical decisions for a minor child. But I guess today it is, because it's happening every day of the week. We just don't hear about it. I got to know a number of these families who I reported on, and I actually attended the funeral of one of the children who didn't make it. So I get emotional when I even think about it, when I reflect on it, that this is what it comes down to. It's a death cult. Medicine, Inc., as it's practiced in this country, is in many ways a death cult. Now, I wouldn't say that's true of every doctor, every nurse, every medical bureaucrat. Certainly there is a need for a conventional medicine. Some of the people are doing their best, trying their best. But in the whole, it is it just doesn't work. And now that they're grabbing control in cahoots with the government, it used to be until after World War II, until it began after World War II, that the federal government was not really involved in health care. It was the private sector, 100%. Then slowly and incrementally, with things like Medicare in 1964, Medicaid, or 1965, rather, Medicaid in the mid-60s, then Obamacare, the federal government has been taking a bigger and bigger role in the practice of medicine in this country. And again, what is their agenda? It's escalating the power, the reach, the numbers of the federal government. Until today, there are actually more people making a living from conventional cancer research and treatment, for example, and more bureaucrats involved with monitoring and regulating it than are dying from the disease in the United States on an annual basis. And I think about 700,000 Americans die annually from cancer, but there's actually more Americans in the medical industrial complex making a living from this endless no-win war on cancer. Nixon declared war on cancer in 1971. It was a bipartisan war passed by both houses of Congress. He promised to cure cancer by 1976, the bicentennial. Overnight, they took over the fight against cancer, pumped billions of dollars into the National Cancer Institute. Here, how many years later? 46 years later, we've still got a war on cancer. They're still talking about the cure is just around the corner. We just need more millions of dollars, billions of dollars, excuse me. Well, billions and hundreds of billions, if not trillions, have been spent since 1971, and we're still at ground zero. It was also the model. The cancer war was the model for the next wars, the war on AIDS, the war on breast cancer, the war on God knows what. It's like we've got to burn this village down in order to save it, which is what was said during the Vietnam War. We've got to kill the patient in order to maybe have some hope of saving the patient. It's absolute insanity. And I say, wake up, America, because if we don't stop this, if we don't stop this single-payer socialist communist madness that's lurking just around the corner with communists like Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, and the rest in the Democratic Party, we are screwed for all time. This is it. This is the final nail of the coffin.
I think some of your best work, Peter, is on this topic. You are so well informed about this. And I'm not so sure people really, the general population, really understand how important this topic is from the discussion of the issues, the medical issues, to the system, that being the single payer system. I just have and please, I really want to have you back for a series of discussions about this to educate the people, and because your knowledge is far superior to anyone of the talking heads on television. But let me ask you this. Is it possible to repeal Obamacare, the ACA? Is it possible to repeal it and replace it, or can we just repeal it? Is either one possible? Is a repeal and replace possible, or is just a simple repeal period possible right now?
I think God only knows, Doug. I would say probably not, but you know, one thought I have after all my years of experience in this area, and it's a personal thought as well, is we can personally repeal, we can take steps to personally repeal Obamacare and whatever else might come at us from the medical industrial government complex by taking steps in our own lives to prevent illness and to treat illness, God forbid if it occurs, by a more natural, non-toxic way. You talk about this frequently on your program with Ted Bohr and other guests that you have on, the nuts and bolts of how to stay well and how to get well if you're unlucky enough to get ill. Of course, this doesn't mean that if you are in a car accident and fracture a limb that you don't need to go to the hospital. Obviously, you do, and you might need a hospitalization or conventional medicine for some other things too. But in every major degenerative chronic disease, whether it's cancer, heart disease, stroke prevention, arthritis, autism, you name it, there are alternative methods which, if you research them fairly and objectively, there is reporting in the scientific literature and in the anecdotal literature that there are other methods. So I've basically been repealing conventional medicine most of my adult life, and I say there's a lot of potential there, which gives me hope for the future and leaves me with an optimistic view, no matter whatever they're cooking up for us in the D.C. deep state swamp.
Wow, very well said. Our guest, Peter Chowka, he is the author of a number of articles on Hagmann Report, just started on Hagmann Report. He got his first article out there today. He's got several on The American Thinker, and he's been a returning guest of the show. Peter, we thank you so much for your time and the great conversation that we had, and we look forward to having you back on the show.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, and God bless you guys.
God bless you, too. We'll be right back after these short messages. Don't go anywhere.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the belly of the beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high net worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagmann. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagmann takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in this community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmannandHagmann.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmannandHagmann.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.